to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello everybody. Glad to be back for yet another week. It was an interesting week of college football. I know it wasn't necessarily the best for you, but
no.
You know, maybe there's a silver lining in all this. Maybe this is what finally pushes your administration to fire Luke Fickell. I didn't even watch the game. I just kind of kept up with it. And when I saw it was like 20-3 versus Maryland, I said, this time, fire him.
It's time. They were chanting fire Luke Fickell in the first quarter. So shouts out to the student section. People crap on the Wisconsin student section, but they did a great job with the fire Luke Fickell chants this week. So I really do appreciate that.
You guys really are like more wholesome versions of LSU fans.
What? So you've mentioned this to me. What do you mean by this? Because I know you've interacted with LSU fans far more than I have.
So Wisconsin fans, I've interacted with them twice, 2015 and last year. Mm-hmm. And they're like kind of crazy, but in a very wholesome way. Like they're funny. They're funny. They're wholesome, but they will chant the F word in the stands, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But they're a little bit more grounded, while LSU fans are like, they're not... There are definitely worse fan bases than LSU. LSU fans are just crazy. Like, they will seriously talk a bunch of crap to you, but also offer you food. And, like, you can tell it's, like, serious crap talk, but it never feels, I guess, really personal, like some fan bases.
Sure. Makes sense. So. Other than Wisconsin, I mean, it was a fine week, I do suppose. We had a couple of kind of big games here that I guess we can jump right into. First game I wanted to talk about, Randy, Clemson. Falls to Syracuse, 34-21. Clemson is 1-3. What's going on with Clemson, Randy? And your thoughts?
Dabo being unwilling to change to the modern era. I'm not going to say that the sky is falling on Clemson, because I actually looked at their record for the past 5 years, and they've won 10 games in four of those 5 years, and in the fifth year, they won 9 games.
Sure.
So it's not like they've been like completely terrible, but it's not, I guess, acceptable compared to what they're used to from the mid-2010s. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a fall off. So I don't know what Dabo – I mean, I know what he needs to do, but I guess you could tell based on his post-game press conference where he was like, why are we held to a different standard? It's because you set the different standard by winning. I mean, you can never get in your feelings about how it feels unfair. It's a badge of honor to have those kinds of standards.
Oh, I agree. It's honestly – what he kind of reminds me of is sort of Paul Christ near the end where – it's clear that he's kind of struggling to adapt to like the transfer portal, obviously, NIL, this kind of new era of college football. And I mean, Dabo, for what it's worth, like everyone hates on him. I've never really had too much beef with him as a coach. I think as like an X's and O's guy, he's pretty good. But he just clearly, it's just not working with this new era that we're in within college football.
I can't completely hate because I can respect and appreciate that he's trying to do things in a more old school, healthier way, I guess. I can appreciate that. But again, you just gotta adapt at least a little bit. You can adapt to some of the better parts of the modern era while being cautious of not going too far with it. There's a way to do it, and he's not doing it.
I agree. One other game I wanted to talk about here, Randy, unfortunately. Indiana clobbers number 9 Illinois 63-10. Do you think this has more to do with Illinois being overrated, or is it maybe time to admit that Indiana might actually be the real deal?
They are not. I'm sorry, Posty, I know you're listening. I don't necessarily think Indiana is the real deal. I don't want to be like disrespectful, because like for Indiana football, this is amazing.
It's huge. Yeah.
But it's clear that they are circling certain games. It seems obvious to me that they're really wanting to put on a show versus lesser competition, which it feels crazy to say that because they did just technically beat a top 10 team by 53 points, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Illinois, but they're still really wanting to show out. But I wonder if they've just like, as a foregone conclusion, are willing to say, yeah, we're going to lose Oregon. We're going to lose Penn State. But these other games, we're going to show out. And we're also going to, if you remember during the offseason, we're going to make sure we schedule as easy as possible and really build our program this way.
Yeah.
So, like, on one hand, it's like, okay, you're scheduling easy and you're beating up on teams for style points. But I can't hate given where Indiana's program has always been.
Right.
Like, it's a pretty valid way to build a program. What I think should give Indiana fans some good positive news going forward, more than the fact that they're winning games, mm-hmm. is that they actually seem to have like a long-term strategy associated with this. How that so? They can build their program on over years. Well, getting these solid seasons, in order to get over the hump to be a true contender, it takes like nearly 5 years to a decade, sure. if not sometimes longer, to build up that fan base, build up local support, get more boosters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Get more attention in the media. You're more attractive to recruits. You're obviously not a flash in a pan. Recruits feel more comfortable committing to your program and to you as a coach.
Right.
It takes time to build this thing. Mm-hmm. And they kind of seem to understand that. So I can appreciate that. They're smart.
You know, it's possible that Indiana will soon be Chicago's Big Ten team. And who knows from there, man? The sky might be the limit.
Does everybody in Chicago, like, is everybody from Chicago actually from Indiana? Because I know they're all Notre Dame fans, too.
No, so it's the opposite. Everyone who's a Notre Dame fan is from Chicago.
Oh, right. Well, but you're saying they could be Chicago's team. Indiana could.
I'm saying, like, dude, if Notre Dame keeps losing games and Indiana keeps winning, you give it 5-10 years, like you're saying. Like, the switch could happen. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I think there's, like, a lot of Chicago area Catholics. They're going to stay loyal to Notre Dame.
Probably. Other games, Randy, you start naming some. What do we got here?
Okay, so I watched all of Florida and Miami. And I got to say, Florida, it's hard to, like, peg where their team is at. They clearly have a lot of talent. They have an elite defense. But, man, with a schedule as brutal as theirs, it's going to be tough to find wins. Mm-hmm. But I'll give them some credit in that they never seem completely out of these games. But on the same token, I've never seen them be in these games. Like, even when it's like a one score game versus LSU, it was 13-7 going into the fourth quarter versus Miami, and never felt like they could actually win the game.
Yeah, you look at the stats. They went
they had 39 yards in the first half, and they went 0-for-13 on third down for the night. Like, yeah. you're just not gonna win that
they're
way.
Not gonna win. Yeah, poor Florida. Miami though, they're really climbing up the ranks this year in the AP poll. It seems like they're going to be the team to beat in the ACC, which is crazy given that Florida State is, you know, kind of having this meteoric rise. But Miami, number two in the AP poll. I don't think anyone saw that coming at the start of the year.
No, I definitely don't think anybody saw that coming. We're ahead of, they have a bye week that's coming up, week, but the week after they're going to play at Florida State, and that's going to be a huge game. Going to be really fun to watch in a couple weeks.
I can't wait. The other game that I wanted to just kind of touch base on real quick here, I was right on my lock of the week. Texas Tech did, in fact, dominate Utah last week, 34-10 on the road. Texas Tech, folks, look out. They're the Big 12 team that's probably going to win it all this year.
I could see it. They have, their team is really fun to watch because they really like to put the ball in their skill position players' hands and just let them make plays. Because I remember, like, for the first half, it was one of those, like, it's 10 a.m. and mountain time, early kickoff. Yeah. But the one play that was, like, really standing out in the first half was, like, the 75-yard catch and run with all these athletic moves and jukes. It's just, they have a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
And I hope they get more national recognition if they continue to win.
For sure. Any other games, Randy, to recap before we hop into our September Heisman segment?
I got to point out Auburn losing to Oklahoma. It was funny.
yeah.
The FCC reffing is kind of spotty at times, but I'm not going to complain when Auburn is on the receiving end of some of it, especially with some of the stuff they've gotten away with in the past. You know, I remember them backwards spiking with Bo Nix and that not being called a fumble. I'm just going to let that go.
So Auburn's done for, right? Like, they're preparing for their annual, like, 8-4 season. Like, this is peak Outback Bowl.
I was about to disagree with you until you said 8-4, but, like, that sounds pretty accurate.
To me, like, is the Outback Bowl still a thing?
Yeah, it might be called something else now, because I remember they don't have the Bloomin' Onion.
I don't know. Like, you associate, like, only a handful of teams with bowls. Like, I associate, for example, Boise State with the Fiesta Bowl. Right. I associate Auburn with the Outback Bowl. You know?
It's not called that anymore. I remember looking this up last year.
It's just it's their perfect tier, you know.
And they went out right at the time that bowls started really leaning into the gimmicks with, like, the Pop-Tart Bowl and the Mayo Bowl, like the Mayo Bad. Okay, it's now the ReliaQuest Bowl.
That's way lame. That's so much less exciting.
I hate when mortgage companies sponsor them.
I agree. Outback, for what it's worth, I liked their whole Bloomin' Onion thing, or they have the Bloomin' Onion mascot versus, I forget the other one. It was like
Bloomin' Onion and
shrimp, coconut shrimp.
Coconut shrimps, and you get like a free appetizer based on
whoever won. Yeah, one. It was like the winner would get free apps, and like that to me is fun. That's way better than like Rocket Mortgage sponsoring a ball game.
Yeah. Right.
All right, let's move on. September Heisman. September is almost over. We've got just one more week of it here. Randy, 4 weeks into the season, who is your current September Heisman?
So I'm going to actually list three candidates.
Okay.
And there are three quarterbacks. I feel like we haven't seen any big wide receiver or running back play to make a Heisman push this year. So it's going to be another quarterback. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, let's just be honest, the Heisman is a hype award.
Yeah.
It's based off hype. And then the stats are used after the fact to back it up. There's a lot of quarterbacks as of this point that have kind of similar stats, are playing well, mm-hmm. and have big games coming up. So I picked out three that do have fairly similar stats.
Okay.
And when I say similar, they're going to be in the range of like 70-something percent completion.
Yeah.
Maybe like 9, 5 to 15 touchdowns, depending on how many games they play, because some teams have already had a bye week. And it's around the same stats per on a per-game basis, right?
Sure.
So I'm going to start with one. Bo Pribula, the Penn State transfer who now plays for Missouri. Mm. And again, if you remember, the Heisman is all about – it's a hype award. Mm-hmm. The thing with Missouri is they do have a game coming versus Alabama a few weeks, a couple weeks.
Okay.
That could be a big – and even in a loss, that could be a Heisman moment game. He also – they play Texas A&M later in the year, and their second-to-last game is going to be at Oklahoma – who is still undefeated. He's got opportunities to really show it. Even at Vanderbilt is going to be considered a quote-unquote Heisman moment game based on how they're playing this year.
For sure.
He's got a lot of opportunities and needs to keep putting up stats, but it's got to be – he really needs that primetime matchup.
He really needs one
of these games.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem with him, though, is the Alabama game and the Oklahoma game, they're 11 a.m. games, so they're not necessarily going to get that big night game hype with Kirk Herbstreit and everything going, right?
Right.
And that's – like, it's actually going to hurt his Heisman chances, the fact that his games are at 11 a.m. instead of 6 p.m.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'll name one. We'll go kind of back and forth here. We'll ping pong. One of my September Heismans so far – I can't believe I'm saying this – is Carson Beck. To get Miami 4-0, you know, with some big wins here early on – and to kind of to elevate the program a little bit, you know, Miami's been a decent program over the last 10 years or so, but like it's this year feels a little bit different, you know what I mean? And Cam Ward, you know, you think about him, right? Miami, they can get some recognition for having a good quarterback. He's gonna have his Heisman moment here potentially in 2 weeks against Florida State at night. So like I see that as a great opportunity. If he can light up Florida State and Miami goes 5-0, they might be the number one team in the nation at that point. Like, he will be in the driver's seat for the Heisman, which is crazy to think.
But I don't really think he will be, for the simple fact that he really still plays, and this is not an insult, he plays like and is more of a game manager quarterback.
Mm.
Like, he only throws when he has to. Florida, he did not have to throw it versus Florida. They were able to run it down his throat, mm-hmm. and he only threw it when he desired to. So, you could just tell watching their games, he's not going to make any hype plays.
He's got good stats, though. Great stats for a game manager. Decent. 74%
Okay. I mean, let me go ahead and ping pong back to mine. I'm going to go directly counter this.
Okay.
A game manager who I think actually could get legitimate Heisman hype is, I'm a little biased, Alabama quarterback Ty Simpson. He has more touchdowns than Carson. Less interceptions. I think he has a better completion percentage, more yards, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Right now, he has 9 touchdowns, 0 interception, like 900 yards, 72% completion.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the Heisman is about hype. You saw the Alabama versus Wisconsin game, and you saw some of those throws he made. Letting three defenders, 2 plays in a row, throwing dimes all game.
Here's the thing.
Versus, Your secondary is the best part of your team.
Here's the thing. Running it up on cupcakes like Wisconsin. I want to see how he does against a real team like Georgia.
That was in the first half. I'm just saying.
I'm giving, I guess, both of us crap. But I agree.
But here's the thing. Remember, it's a hype award. Right. Imagine, you know, next week versus at Georgia, he has a great game.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
He doesn't even have to be super explosive, but he has to make the right throws at the right time, and he's proven that he can. He is very accurate, makes great decisions with the ball, and he can fit it into some really tight windows.
Definitely.
And versus some elite competition, he's going to be able to do that, and he's going to need to do that, and he's going to have, I'm saying, like 4 or 5 opportunities on the schedule going forward to really prove it.
Yeah.
As long as he is never a reason we lose a game, and I have no reason to believe he will. Even in the Florida State game where he was forced to play hero ball, where we had no run game, our receivers kept dropping passes, they kept getting hurt, and he was getting, you know, our offensive line was breaking down dang near every play. He was still throwing dimes as he needed to, and he was not the reason for that loss. Like, he had 0 turnovers in a game where he had to play hero ball and had no offensive line help.
So I agree. He's definitely giving the conversation, I think, especially if Bama continues to keep winning here. I'm going in, like, ascending order here in terms of, like, my final pick is my most likely. So for my number 2 pick, speaking of stat padding, Dante Moore of Oregon is in the driver's seat to have an incredible year on paper. What I mean by that is Oregon has a relatively easy schedule this year. They have some decent matchups. Penn State, you know, they're going to this coming weekend here. And they still have to play USC, Indiana. But think about Oregon, man. They're just going to keep, like, giving him 350-yard games, like, left and right. Like, this whole season, he's going to be averaging, like, 3.5 touchdowns, almost 400 yards a game, as far as I'm concerned. And you look at, like, his current stats right now, man. 11 touchdowns, 1 interception, almost 1,000 yards. I think Dante Moore is going to be in the conversation just on stats alone. Not probably from moments, but from stats.
I completely agree, because it's going to be a situation where it's like, if they don't have an obvious Heisman contender, Heisman frontrunner, he's going to get it as the default.
Yeah,
I think that's how that's going to work. And as my third, I'm actually going to bring up Fernando Mendoza for Indiana.
Ooh.
Because Oregon and Indiana play each other in, it looks like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a huge game.
It'll be fun.
That could determine the path. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I actually really do, well, obviously, I say actually, of course, I really do hope Indiana really shows out in this game. It would be very fun to watch them beat Oregon, because we know how Oregon is. Mm-hmm. We know how they kind of get a little full of themselves, beating up on nobodies.
Very.
I could completely see them disrespecting and overlook Indiana, especially after the Penn State game, where they have to travel across the country to Happy Valley.
Yeah. It's going to be tough. I think he's definitely going to be in that conversation come December. My current front runner, Randy, is crazy, but a fan favorite for my September Heisman, Diego Pavia, Vanderbilt.
Mm.
Here's why. Dude, he is balling out, and Vandy is, like, actually kind of legit. They just beat Georgia State 70-21. They've got a cupcake here against Utah State this week. But, dude, they're playing at Alabama. Now, Randy, we know what happened last year. I'm just saying, if he can repeat that kind of performance on the road.
Oh, he's won it. If he repeats that, he's already won it midseason.
It's obscene. I, like, mean, the things he's doing for Vanderbilt are unheard of in our lifetime. I know Jay Cutler, but, like, let's be real. Like, this is big. A guy like this, in my mind, is someone that deserves the Heisman, someone who can elevate a program. You know, to me, that's, like, the biggest criteria.
I completely agree with you. I think if anybody deserves the Heisman the most, like, based on the actual criteria of the award, it should go to Diego Pavia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just more speaking of who probably will get it. We probably even should probably, you know, tune our conversation to be about who should get the Heisman rather than who we will think get the Heisman, because I feel like we're talking about who we think will get it.
That's true.
Because we know the Heisman voting is all kinds of messed up. If who should get the Heisman should be Diego Pavia, because he is the most impactful player in the country for what he's done for that program.
100%.
And he's got so many great opportunities coming up. Alabama, LSU, Missouri, yeah. Texas, even Auburn and Tennessee. Like, those are going to be big moments for him.
Absolutely. Let's move on to everyone's favorite. This was their Super Bowl award. I got to hand my note to Arch Manning for staring down a Sam Houston defender after scoring a touchdown. Did you see this clip, Randy?
I did see the clip. Arch.
What is going on, man?
You know what I love the most about that clip is that he missed like multiple open wide receivers in the end zone and then had a completely clean pocket he just kind of scrambled from to get that walk-in touchdown. And then he stared down the defender and was like, dude, you did not make that play. The rest of your team made that play.
The whole story around Arch has been how he's so humble. He's such a humble guy. And then he's like showing up in these like NIL commercials mid-game. Like, I'm glad that, like, everyone kind of collectively hates him in a way. It's like, guys like him are really bad for the sport, as far as I'm concerned. And so it's been nice to see some pushback, but it's...
And here's the thing. His quote about it after it was my mom was mad at me about that. And it's like, you shouldn't be thinking that way like it's some kind of joke. The real way somebody like him should be thinking is like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. I should have celebrated with my teammates and thanked my teammates. Yep. Instead of wanting to stare somebody down.
Own up to it.
Because your teammates are who you're going to have to rely on as you get through this slump and as you struggle.
Yeah. Ugh. So, yeah, congrats on the Super Bowl, Arch. You've peaked in life beating Sam Houston. Who do you have, Randy?
It's hard to give this. Originally, I wanted to give it to Indiana over Illinois. I'm going to give it to Indiana for the simple fact that they poured it on because they wanted to prove something in the second half.
Yeah.
Like, and I remember Kirk said that his halftime quote was what he wanted to see was more points, which, hey, all respect to him for wanting to pour it on, but you can tell when it's pouring it on to make yourself feel better versus, I guess, prove something to other people. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I mean, it's kind of it was a fun kind of Super Bowl. You know, if Indiana peaks here, at least they had their moment in the spotlight. You know what I mean? Elephant in the room. We got to talk about it. My elephant in the room this week, Randy, is Mike Gundy and the Oklahoma State Cowboys. They lost to Tulsa 19-12. Oklahoma State is in the dumpster at this point. You know, if you recall, they went 3-9 last year. Probably not going to win a game the rest of this season. Mike Gundy, what's going on, man?
I have no idea. This does not make any sense because I think I said this last week or a couple weeks ago. They have more than enough resources and money and support to have a very good program. They're probably the second wealthiest program in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. There's just absolutely no reason for any of this to happen. It's almost like they've just given up and just are just letting Oklahoma have the state and be the premier program of the state. They're not even trying to put up some kind of respectable fight for that.
Yeah.
And it's pathetic.
It's pathetic. It's going to be where Wisconsin's at in probably like a year and a half. So it's kind of foreshadowing as far as I'm concerned, but that's the elephant, folks.
My award, I had a lot of options to give this award to. We've already talked about Arch Manning. We've talked about him multiple times through multiple weeks on the show. I think I'm going to give it to Nebraska and Dylan Raiola.
Yeah.
The game was not as close as the score indicates because they scored like a garbage time touchdown to make it look a lot better. Mm-hmm. They even had to have a really lucky Hail Mary to kind of make it a little more competitive going into the half. I mean, it was tied at halftime, but they had a lot of luck, a lot of fluky, great plays break their way, and they had a garbage time touchdown, and they still lost to a pretty hapless Michigan team.
Yeah.
So I have to go to them. And the way Dylan Raiola carries himself to just be Patrick Mahomes.
And didn't he have some comments about the room, man. He was like upset that people are comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. Like, what's going on?
Did you copy his walkout? And the thing with Dylan Raiola is that if you look at Nebraska's upcoming schedule, he plays a lot of mid-tier opponents that I feel like he's just going to look mid against, and he's still going to copy the whole Patrick Mahomes thing, and I'm going to continue to whine. And I don't know. It's the elephant in the room. Like, what is his ceiling? I feel like he's got so much hype and so much media attention, sort of, and it's just going to lead nowhere.
I think they will lose games. You got to trust the process. And as soon as Nebraska is no longer a, you know, ranked team, they'll be like a fringe, like 20-30-ish kind of ranked team, but like not a playoff threat. You know, by that point, I think the hype will kind of die down from the media.
Right. All right. So without further ado, are you ready to move on to next week's games?
Let's get it. We've got some good ones here, and Wisconsin can't lose. We got to buy. So I say we start with your team, Randy.
This would have been This would have been the week to fire Luke Fickell. I don't know why you didn't pull the trigger on Sunday. I was thinking that, like, I was expecting to see the headline, but whatever.
A long way to go, Randy. Long way to go.
Did you have somebody you wanted to mention? Like, do you have anybody in mind, by the way?
Oh, yes, that's right. Another thing. We're having so many segments on the Jimbotcast now. I want to do this, like, weekly segment where I suggest a head coach to replace Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. My suggestion this week, folks, new head coach of Wisconsin of the week, Mel Tucker.
No.
Tuck coming home. He played for Wisconsin. People forget
he did
this.
Play for Wisconsin. I mean, maybe if he can
Barry Alvarez
get past the whole scandal thing that happened at Michigan State. I don't know, like, what all went down with that.
He was, listen, okay, he didn't realize his camera was on, you know. We've all been there, but I've been, like, eating food or something, not, you know, working it, as they say. But here's the thing, Randy, I'm serious. Woke is dead. Let's face it. Mel Tucker is going to be coaching somewhere in the next 2 years. Why not Wisconsin?
I mean, if you just want to be the villain, maybe that's what Wisconsin needs, is somebody to just make them the villain, have your whole...
I don't want people... Yes, look at Colorado, dude. People went from, like, feeling sorry about Colorado to hating them. We need that with Wisconsin. I say fully embrace it.
Well, we'll save another coach for another week. We'll table that for now. Speaking of Colorado. So without further ado, now let's move on to this week's games.
Good.
I just have the ranked games pulled up, so if you have any unranked, go ahead and let me know as we kind of go down the list.
Sure.
But I am starting with Friday. So on Friday, we have Florida State, Friday night, playing at 3-1 Virginia. It's a Friday night game, short week. Do you think Virginia has the chance to do something really funny?
No, and here's why. I think this is one of those... The thing about trap games, right, is if you're calling it a trap game, it's no longer a trap game. And I'm seeing people talk about this like it's a trap game. I think Florida State is well aware that they can't drop the ball on Friday night against Virginia.
I know what you mean. It's almost like it's way too obvious. Friday night away at a 3-1 Virginia team that's been playing well. Their only loss is a very close loss, a 4-point loss at NC State, who is also 3-1. And they have Miami the week after. So it's just, it's too obvious, man. They're not going to go down like that. If they're going to lose a trap game, their trap game's going to be like Virginia Tech or something.
Yeah, it'll be something no one expects. People are expecting this, so it's not going to happen.
All right. So moving on to Saturday, we have, I'm kind of going down the list here. This is interesting. 1-2 Notre Dame at Arkansas. I did not realize Notre Dame played Arkansas this year. That's an interesting game.
I've heard that Vegas likes the Hogs in this one.
You know,
they're saying
purely based off vibes, I just feel like Arkansas has a good shot in this game. I don't know why I think that. They have a decent quarterback, and he's one of those like dual threat quarterbacks. He's the team's leading rusher too. You know, who knows?
Arkansas did just lose to Memphis last week.
They blew so that game, that to be fair. And that could have been a trap game, as they say.
Trap game, looking ahead. Yeah, looking ahead a little bit. Notre Dame, I'm not sure what to make of them yet. I mean, it seems like, you know, their two losses are still to undefeated teams. So, like, it's hard to be too judgmental of that. But, like, they didn't really wow me against Purdue last week. The scoreboard looked, like, decent, but they let Purdue score 30 points on them. I think Notre Dame has a defensive problem, and I think Arkansas is going to put up points. If Notre Dame wins this, it's going to be close. I think regardless, this is going to be kind of a fun battle to watch.
I agree with you. That's the point I was about to make, is that it's Arkansas's offense that actually looks really good this year. It looks decent by their standards. I mean, they put up 35 against Ole Miss. They did put up 31 against Memphis. And I mean, in their cupcakes, to put up over 50. So, like, they have an offense, and with Notre Dame's weakness being their defense, who knows what could happen in the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
This game is interesting to me. So, Washington is still undefeated, and number one Ohio State, whose offense has been kind of struggling a little bit, goes to Washington. Yep. And the reason this intrigues me is because it's a 2:30 game, so it's going to be like at noon on the West Coast, and they have to travel across the country. Do you think that cross-country travel is going to do anything?
You know, the thing is, man, I don't think it impacts a sport like football as much as it does something like basketball or like volleyball or something, right? I imagine with all these guys, like, it's pretty often that they're already flying from like one location to another, you know, or even taking a bus. I imagine like a 5-hour bus ride is like longer and way worse than like a 3-hour plane flight. You know what I mean? So I actually don't think that's going to play that big of a role here, at least in an afternoon game. If this was like at, you know, midnight East Coast time, then it probably would be. But no, I think Ohio State's going to come in and probably wipe the floor here pretty easily.
Okay. Bringing it back to the SEC, we have number 4, undefeated LSU, at number 13, undefeated Ole Miss. I'm going to go ahead and give it. This is my lock of the week. Is I fully believe in Ole Miss's ability to win this game, and I believe they will win this game. I believe this is finally the week that Brian Kelly has his Brian Kelly moments.
Slam his fist somewhere.
Slam his fist down. He's going to lose and talk about, we're still a great team, yada, yada, yada. You know, all that
blame his players.
Blame his players, you know.
Yeah, the usual. Yeah, I agree, actually. I've always kind of liked Ole Miss. I think they're probably the most underrated SEC team pretty much every year since Lane Kiffin arrived. And I think they have an opportunity here to really make a big statement and honestly push themselves in the playoff conversation. They'd be 5-0, undefeated. They'd be a team to look out for if they can win this.
Here's why I also picked them. So when I clicked on Ole Miss's ESPN profile, the top story is Rebels Lane Kiffin speaks highly of LSU's roster. Purely based off vibes, I'm in that headline. Yeah, Ole Miss is going to win.
That remind you of anyone? Maybe one of his mentors back in the day?
It does remind me of somebody. And it's the delivery. It's more than just saying a cheesy line. It's the way it's delivered. And I don't even know how to articulate it.
It's taking your opponent seriously and respecting them. You know? You got to do that.
And a lot of people can pay lip service to it, but you have to actually do it. Like on an individual level at the roster.
Yeah, 100%.
And 2:30, we go into the Big Ten. We have undefeated number 11, Indiana, going to Iowa, 3-1 Iowa, whose only loss is to Iowa State. As a Big Ten fan, what do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, no, here's the thing, dude. Iowa, if you recall, the only really time I've kind of sat down and watched Iowa was El Asico against Iowa State. But what I see in Iowa is your very standard, you know, Kirk Ferentz type team. They're so boring. They're generic. They're not going to beat themselves, but they're not going to beat other people. And I think Indiana's a team that, frankly, is legit enough to take care of business here. I don't think Indiana's going to have too much trouble putting up points against this Iowa defense, even on the road.
I tended to agree. Rutgers put up 28 against Iowa. And again, I watched the game. It was one of those things where it was super close, back and forth. And Iowa just outlasted them into the fourth quarter, pulled ahead, that kind of thing. And they were really celebrating an offense to finally have these positive plays. But you could tell it was more outlasting Rutgers than it was making big offensive plays, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I believe in Indiana. Like, Indiana is legit enough to say they will take care of business.
Yeah. Man, we got a lot of good games this week here.
We do. We have two huge games. I hate that both of these games are on at the same time. I wish they could have staggered
this. Yes.
So we'll start with the Big Ten Premier 6:30 game. Undefeated Oregon, number 6, at undefeated Penn State, number 3.
Yep.
I'm gonna defer to you on this
one. So, I mean, this is the James Franklin special, right? This is peak Penn State, the whiteout, like, they're going to lose. Like, it's not even – I wish I bet on sports because this feels like easy money, right? Has James Franklin ever won a game like this? Ever? He beat Ohio State one time, didn't they? Like in 2017 or something, they beat Ohio State.
To say 2017 was like 8 years ago.
But, yeah, that was like 8 years ago. They're going to lose. And they'll probably be humiliated. If I'm being honest, like, I think Oregon makes a huge statement win here in this game. I don't think Penn State is any third best team in the country.
I have to agree. I think Drew Aller has been given too much hype. And I think Oregon's just better across the board. I'm like, let's face it, we know Oregon's an overconfident, very cocky, arrogant team. But this is one of those situations where they know what's up. They know what they got to do. Like, if Oregon's going to go down, they're going to lose. Let's just say it. They're going to lose to, like, Minnesota or something completely random.
Oh, it'll be a total just like, yeah, it'll be a game that they just kind of, you know,
sleepwalk.
Aren't prepared for, I guess. Sleeping on, yeah. They're not sleepwalking into this game. They're going to win.
Yeah. I'm also going to defer to you on this other 6:30 game, this time in the SEC, because you know the old saying, how they don't let doctors perform on their own patients because the clouds their judgment.
Come on.
So we have number 17, 2-1 Alabama at, remember it's at, undefeated number 5 Georgia. What do you think?
Randy, it's my lock of the week, is what I think.
Ooh.
Alabama is going to have a massive program-defining win, which you don't hear often for Alabama, but they kind of need one this year after their perception of that, you know, Florida State game kind of tarnished them a bit. Bama's back, no doubt in my mind. Randy, like, let's be real. Georgia barely survived against Tennessee just a week ago or so. I'm not impressed by Georgia. Alabama is a ticking time bomb. Ty Simpson's about to go off. Just, Randy, just enjoy the win. Like, enjoy staying at home watching this bloodbath. Just for once. Have fun.
If Georgia beats us, I'll say it like this. If Georgia beats us, it's because we beat ourselves, which we have a tendency to do under Kalen DeBoer on the road. We can have some absolute stinkers on the road, especially in very loud environments, because the way his offense operates is it relies on a lot of communication from the sideline, and he has failed to adapt his communication to be in line with what the crowd noise does. We saw it multiple times last year, and we saw it in the Florida State game. I have no reason to believe he suddenly fixed that. So, like, I think the 3-point home field advantage that they usually give as, like, a betting odd is going to be more like 10 to 14 points for Georgia. Because we just played that badly. Our communication is so reliant on sideline yelling at each other, yelling at the line, audibling. Here, Ty Simpson's going to be yelling at the players to make audibles, make changes. Kalen DeBoer's going to be trying to yell it out. We get so many delayed games and false starts because of it while on the road. And so they're going to have a massive home field advantage for that reason. And that's what's going to make this game really tough. Like, I honestly would not be surprised if we beat ourselves, make some really dumb communication errors. And the things, it's both sides of the ball that do this on the road. Like, our defense struggles on the road. It's very frustrating to watch. I could see us having one of those plays where they just kind of run it down our throat and we just can't figure out why. I don't even know how good their running game is. I think they have a pretty average running game and average offense, but it's going to be constant chip runs and we can't seem to get the right stops. And we always seem to be needing to get stops. We can't quite do it. We might have like a really good third quarter where we finally get some drives going or get some good stops, but then our offense is starting to stall out because their crowd is now responding to that, knowing they got to step up. I fear a very discombobulated game.
You've had a week off and a bye week to recompose, you know, work out some of the kinks on the offense. You know what I mean, man? I don't know. Randy, I feel really good about Alabama in this game. It's my lock of the week. So, got that going.
Have I ever been wrong
about Bama?
I don't have a notepad file where I keep track. Maybe I should.
You should start keeping track because I don't think I have.
I remember the 4th-and-31 Auburn game where it was 4th-and-31. My dad was literally on the phone with my uncle where they were discussing Sugar Bowl tickets before the fourth down play. And you messaged me and you're like, how does it feel knowing you're guaranteed to win? You're going to score a touchdown on this play. And I literally told you, dude, just shut up.
Yep.
And then, I called it. And then 10 seconds later, I'm just like, what? Mm-hmm. How did you know?
It's just sometimes you can tell Alabama. They've got plot armor against certain teams. And Georgia, you have to admit, Alabama has plot armor against Georgia. Probably more than just about any other team.
That is true, but I just feel like the circumstances are a bit different here. There's a lot more. I mean, there's always a ton at stake when we play each other, but I don't know. It feels like there's even more this time, and I don't know why. At least for us, there's a lot more pressure on us than there is on Georgia this time.
Yeah. You got. I think Kalen DeBoer still. There's a lot of doubters, obviously. I think ever since that Florida State game, this is his opportunity to kind of redeem himself, or conversely, have Bama fans saying he's got to get out of town. So it's a huge game for him.
I mean, if we play a respectable game, I just don't want it to be frustrating to watch. That's almost all that I ask. Like,
I'm quite familiar with that, so it's not fun. I'll tell you that much.
I think with Georgia also, I honestly kind of wonder if they see this as like, even if they lose, they're going to get a good chance to rematch us potentially.
I think they between the SEC championship or the playoffs. I mean, you look at Georgia's schedule ahead of them. I think that they've definitely got an opportunity. It's relatively easy for the SEC. So Georgia's definitely going to be like kind of playing in those kinds of games come December and January. I think the question just is Bama. So a lot riding on this one.
At the night slot, this is going to be somewhat interesting. In the night slot, we have at 9:15 BYU ranked undefeated, number 25, at 2-2 Colorado. I just find this game interesting because BYU is a ranked team and Colorado is probably going to get a ranked win.
Well, dude, I can't believe I'm saying this. This is one of the very few times where I'm probably going to root for Colorado in a game.
You're not a BYU fan?
I don't like BYU, folks. Let it be known.
They're like very gimmicky as a program. I get they have the whole Mormon thing go on, but like there's just something about them that's weird. I don't know.
You know what it is? This is one aspect of it. There's many. There's something about their mascot, the Cougar, doing all these backflips and stuff. You know, I don't know if this is appropriate for the Gym Podcast. But I think we're all kind of thinking it. The Cougar, the BYU Cougar, is flamboyant in a way that BYU fans would otherwise really, really discriminate against. But because he's a mascot, it's okay. Do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, I kind of get what you're saying. It's like they all have this culture where they like don't drink. I don't know how to describe it. Like, I know you don't drink, but it's like it's different.
It's very different.
Key defining personality trait for you.
Yeah. I drink coffee, which is also a lot of BYU. So, yeah, I know. I'll be mad at me for that one. But no, I'm rooting for Colorado, if you can believe it. This is probably the only time all year
I'll root for Colorado. See, here's the thing. I've always been a Deion defender on the show. I like Deion. I feel like he's a little cocky, but in kind of the right way. He's responded to adversity well. He's proven, even like the dude got diagnosed with cancer and is still committed to trying to win at Colorado Travis Hunter there. Like he's getting 5-star recruits. He's actually trying to build a program. I can respect what he's trying to do.
I agree. I mean, I truly like, honestly, like if I was him, I would just retire and like try to live whatever I have left. Life. I mean, it sounds like he's on the other end of things with cancer, but like that's so serious, man, you know, to be diagnosed with that and to still be coaching. Like that's admittedly a pretty cool story, you know, even for a big Deion hater like myself.
Right. Real quick, I'm looking down. I didn't know if you had any other games. I'm looking down some of the unranked matchups.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers about everything that I wanted to talk about. Oh! I guess the only other game.
Go ahead.
No, I insist.
Well, really what I wanted to discuss was if we have group of five favorites for the playoffs, who we think is going to make it.
How are we feeling about... See, I was going to say Tulane, but they just lost to Ole Miss. I don't... Is there a front runner at this point?
I was going to say Tulane, but I actually have one. So hear me out on this. And this could be really funny. Imagine if North Texas makes the playoff over regular Texas.
You're joking.
Let me remind you, they are 4-0. They beat Washington State 2 weeks ago, 59-10.
They beat Army.
They beat Western Michigan and Lamar. Granted, they beat Lamar 51-0. They obviously have a high-flying offense. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I haven't done any research on North Texas other than some of these box scores. But they clearly have something cooking here.
Yeah.
If I remember, the Army game was they were in control for most of it. Let me see. Yeah, that's right. They were in control for most of it, so it was kind of not garbage time. They did take it to overtime. But point being, they have a team.
Yeah, some you know, G5 school is going to make it this year, of course. I think, in a way, though, like, they're not being a front runner right now kind of makes it more interesting. I think we're going to see teams kind of rise to the ranks as the weeks go on. Actually, come to think of it, I think Memphis might be the team to beat. They did beat Arkansas, like I mentioned. They're 4-0 right now. They've got a pretty easy schedule. I mean, all G5 schools at this point have a pretty easy schedule for the most part. Right. So Memphis could be fun. They're a team that's, like, generally pretty good. You know,
Memphis they're still play South Florida and Tulane. Those are two great, and Navy. Yeah. Those are three great opportunities to get some respect, more respectable wins, more so than the Arkansas win. With North Texas, I think all they really have left, they have Navy and they play South Florida. Those are two opportunities.
Yeah.
As long as the American Athletic Conference doesn't implode itself like the Big 12 likes to do, cannibalize itself, then they
the AAC might be better than the Big 12 by the end of the year. That might be the case. We'll see. If teams like Memphis and Tulane keep winning, who knows?
Very true. All right. Well, that's all I have.
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up. This should be a fun week, Randy. This should be a really fun week of college football. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you all at home are looking forward to it as well. Randy, thank you for joining me on the Gym Podcast. It's been fun. It's been fun, Randy.
It's been a fun week. I look forward to more football.
Of course, as always. Folks, until next time, high tide.
Forward.